is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM with translators K269AW Larson Bay, K269AX Carlet, K269AY Akiak, K269AZ Old Harbor, K220AU Port Lyons, and streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. It's currently 45 degrees out at the airport, very foggy outside, east winds of 9 miles per hour. Tonight, showers throughout the night. Cloudy with a low around 41 degrees. We'll see winds out of the east at 20 miles per hour, gusting to 30 miles per hour. And tomorrow, more rain in the forecast with a high near 48. We'll see east winds of 25 to 30 miles per hour, gusting to 40 miles per hour for tomorrow. Rain looks like it will continue throughout the weekend. Coming up, the legislature finally passes a budget down to the wire. And more marine debris cleanup programs are coming to Alaska, including Kodiak. That's after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Debt ceiling talks are now on hold, dashing hopes for an agreement by this weekend to lift the nation's borrowing limit and avoid a default. The lead negotiator for House Republicans, Congressman Garrett Graves of Louisiana, announced the pause as he emerged from a meeting with White House negotiators this morning.
The House passed a strong bill that has great savings in it. It is responsible and it puts us on a path to bend the curve. And some people are willing to have reasonable conversations about how you can actually move forward and do the right thing, then we're not going to sit here and talk to ourselves.
House Republicans are insisting on federal spending cuts to accompany an increase in the debt limit. Democrats oppose linking the two. President Biden is at the G7 summit in Japan. He's opting to cut short his overseas trip to return to the U.S. to address the debt ceiling impasse as the country moves closer to the point of default projected to be within weeks. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is expected to personally address G7 leaders this weekend. NPR's Aya Batrawi says the leader also attended a gathering of Arab leaders in Saudi Arabia.
Zelensky told leaders at the Arab League summit that some of them were turning a blind eye to Russia's aggressions. He pressed them to push back against Russia's invasion of his country, which he said also impacted Ukrainian Muslims. Arab states have largely refused to pick sides in the war, keeping ties with both Russia and Ukraine, which are major wheat suppliers. The summit also drew attention because of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's return after a nearly 12-year-long suspension due to the country's civil war. Having failed to topple him, most Arab states have been slowly rebuilding ties with Syria, despite resistance from Qatar and Kuwait and opposition from the U.S. Aya Batrawi, NPR News, Jeddah, Saudi Arabia.
Football legend Jim Brown has died. He was 87 years old. Brown was a star running back at Syracuse University and with the Cleveland Browns in the 1950s and 60s. He retired from football at age 30 to pursue a career in acting. He was also active in the civil rights movement. His wife Monique announced his death in an Instagram post this afternoon. The longtime CEO of Morgan Stanley says he plans to step down in the next 12 months. James Gorman broke the news about his departure to shareholders today. Here's NPR's David Gura.
Among the man and the one woman who run the big banks, there hasn't been much turnover recently. James Gorman has led Morgan Stanley for more than a decade. He became its chief executive in 2010. Well, since then, the firm has grown. Its market cap is now around $140 billion, and it acquired E-Trade and Eaton Vance. Before Gorman became Morgan Stanley's CEO, he oversaw its wealth management division, which has become a larger part of the overall business, and that's helped the firm weather a recent downturn in investment banking. Gorman says the bank's board is looking closely at three internal candidates for the top job.
That's David Gura reporting. This is NPR News. Western Canada's heading into a long holiday weekend under wildfire alerts. Hardest hit is the oil-producing province of Alberta, where about 10,000 people have already been forced to evacuate for their safety. Some parks and campgrounds have been closed. Local officials say the Victoria Day weekend is generally one of the busiest times for human-caused wildfires. But Wildfire season has taken hold earlier and with greater ferocity as a result of record high temperatures and dry terrain conditions driven by climate change. The Food and Drug Administration today gave the green light to a so-called bionic pancreas to help people with type 1 diabetes better control their blood sugar levels. NPR's Rob Stein has details.
Bionic pancreas was developed in part by Ed Damiano, a Boston University biomedical engineer, to help his son, who was born with type 1 diabetes. People with type 1 diabetes are prone to serious, even life-threatening complications because their bodies can't naturally control the levels of sugar in their blood. The bionic pancreas automatically monitors blood sugar levels and administers the necessary insulin. The system won the FDA's okay for anyone age 6 and older on the same day Damiano's son, David, turned 24. Rob Stein, NPR News.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 109 points, ending the day at 33,426. The S&P was down 6 points at 4,191, and the NASDAQ closed down 30 points, ending at 12,657. It's NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include BritBox with the new season of Grace, based on the detective novels by Peter James. Grace and more original mysteries, including The Bay and Karen Peary, are streaming at BritBox.com/NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Kirsten Dobrath. The Alaska legislature struck a deal to fund the government yesterday, the first day of a special session called by the governor. It included a significant boost to public school funding and a $1,300 permanent fund dividend. The deal came one day after the legislature failed to pass a budget at the end of its regular session. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports.
Senate leaders say they negotiated with the House members late Wednesday night and throughout the day Thursday. The deal ultimately contained extra money for several local projects for members of the House. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, says finally getting a list of capital budget requests from the House majority helped seal the deal.
We worked off their list, and that's the majority projects that were put in that budget.
The budget has money for a new roof for the Palmer Library, $2 million for fixing the Mary Avenue storm drainage system in Anchorage, and harbor float replacements in Dillingham, among other items. It also contained a small amount for childcare grants and a new program to fund local medical care options. With energy in the final weeks focused on the budget, the legislature adjourned without passing several high-profile bills, including one to reform involuntary commitment laws for mentally incapacitated people, and it didn't pass a program pushed by the governor to pump greenhouse gases back into the ground. Stevens says the body learned some lessons so it can be more productive in future sessions.
The lesson is follow the schedule. You know, we all know there's a schedule. We all know there's a time at which you cannot go to a conference committee. We just all have to pay attention to that, and we will. I mean, that's my intention next year.
Throughout the last weeks of this year's session, the House and Senate were divided over the size of the dividend, with the House favoring a figure more than double the $1,300 ultimately approved. But House leaders couldn't muster the votes to dip into savings to pay for it. The final budget included a provision to pay an additional $500 if oil prices are above predictions. Delana Johnson, a Republican from South Anchorage, says that was important.
Would we have liked it to be higher? Well, absolutely, that too. But, you know, you can. Sometimes you only get to meet in the middle.
The bill passed the Senate 15-1 and the House 26-14. All members of the House minority voted in favor of the bill, while the Republican-dominated majority split, with some leaders voting against it. It now goes to the governor, who can still veto the bill. Governor Mike Dunleavy is currently on a charity bear hunting trip, his office says, and he hasn't publicly commented on the budget. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Lex Trinan.
Alaska's death rate from traumatic brain injuries, or TBIs, is the highest in the nation. That's according to a recent report from the Alaska Department of Epidemiology. Dr. Catherine Newell is an epidemiologist for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention assigned to Alaska. She put together the report.
The fact that one in four deaths in Alaskans aged under 30 was related to a TBI is a shocking statistic, as so many of these deaths are preventable.
Traumatic brain injuries range from a mild bump on the head to a deadly punctured skull. The report looked at rates of emergency visits, hospitalization, and death for TBIs over 5 years ending in 2021. Suicides and accidental falls caused the most TBI deaths in Alaska, and Newell says there was a lot of variation by age group.
For old adults aged over 85 years, 72% of TBI-related deaths were due to unintentional falls, whereas in younger adults, the largest proportion of deaths were due to suicide.
According to the report, Alaska Native and American Indian people were disproportionately likely to have serious or deadly brain injuries. Vehicle crashes seriously injured or killed the most young adults, and for people in northern Alaska, ATV and snow machine accidents were likely to cause serious head injuries. Over 40% of the deaths due to traumatic brain injury were suicide by firearms. Newell says prevention is the only real cure for traumatic brain injuries. Because the causes of TBIs vary so much, she suggests a variety of ways to prevent injuries.
A good strategy is to think about how we are supporting our older community and our elders to prevent slips and falls, especially in the winter months.
The report mentions existing community programs that give ice cleats to elders. Other suggested interventions include firearm safety education, healthcare screenings for elders, and free helmet giveaways. The report also found many people had trouble getting care after they experienced a traumatic brain injury, usually due to cost or geography. And plastic wood, fishing nets, and buoys are just some of the waste that washes up on even the most remote parts of Alaska's coastline. Now programs aimed at cleaning up that marine debris are getting a funding boost from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, thanks to an influx of grant money from the bipartisan infrastructure law. Some of that funding will beef up marine debris cleanup in Kodiak. KMXT has this report. Nearly $14 million in federal funding is earmarked for two separate programs aimed at cleaning up marine debris in the state. The money is distributed through NOAA's Marine Debris Program and funded by the bipartisan infrastructure law that was passed in 2021. Peter Murphy is Alaska's regional debris coordinator with NOAA. He says the new programs go beyond cleaning up existing debris.
But also prevention, finding ways to reduce how much is getting to the ocean, because at the end of the day, we're not going to be able to clean our way out of the problem.
A portion of the funds will go to the University of Alaska Fairbanks to establish a Center for Marine Debris based in Kodiak. That will serve as a kind of headquarters for marine debris removal projects across the state. The center will eventually be able to process and recycle debris that's shipped there. The other project is focused on removing abandoned fishing gear from Chesapeake Bay on the East Coast. More than half the funds will go to that project, but it will also include a grant program that organizations in Alaska can tap into. Murphy says abandoned gear is a problem across the country, and it has a big impact on fisheries. For instance, a study in Southeast Alaska showed that abandoned crab pots were still catching crabs and other marine animals years after they were lost.
Fishing gear is a specifically impactful type of marine debris because once it gets lost or abandoned in the marine environment, it does what it was intended to do. It continues to catch animals, but it does so indiscriminately.
Money for both programs is included in the bipartisan infrastructure law for this year, and both the marine debris and fishing gear cleanup programs are set to start this summer. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath. With the school in Newtok shuttered, a community ravaged by climate change is now without an emergency evacuation center, and much of the community's critical infrastructure is on the brink of failure. Emily Schwing has more.
A catastrophic generator fire at the Newtok Iaprun School in January took the community's backup drinking water source offline. But at the time, Newtok was drawing all of its drinking water from the school because the main water plant was inoperable. Those problems at the water plant have now been fixed. Alexi Killengock is Newtok's water plant operator. He says there are still other issues, especially involving the community's storage tank.
I don't know, there's like 50 patches in there.
50 patches on the tank?
Yes, about.
How old is that tank, do you know?
1982, 83.
The giant 40-year-old tank holds up to 211,000 gallons of water. It sits on a huge wooden platform in the center of the village. When it's full, it weighs nearly 1.7 million pounds, the equivalent of more than 800 one-ton pickup trucks. Right now, the tank is running low, and it's not clear if it's safe to fill this summer.
It's all rotten, that is. Even under here, it's sinking.
The platform that supports the tank is sinking into the ground.
It's all rotten.
Alexei, this looks really bad. Like, really bad.
It is bad.
Does this building actually have 5 years left in it?
Yeah, I think so. That's it up there.
You think so, or you hope so?
I hope so.
You hope so?
Well, maybe we'll be gone before 5 years is up.
For three decades, the residents of Newtok have been trying to relocate 9 miles across the Ninglik River to a new subdivision called Makhtarvik. The single greatest hurdle is available housing. Until everyone has a place to live, people will stay in Newtok, where melting permafrost continues to degrade critical infrastructure. At the back end of town, a half dozen diesel tanks stand at precarious angles. They were already listing before the remnants from Typhoon Murbach slammed into Alaska's west coast last fall. That storm has changed the minds of so many residents who were otherwise unsure about moving. Bosco John works at Newtok's small power plant.
Do you think people are safe here in Newtok?
I don't think so, because of the flood. That like house over there, it reached and it lifted it up and kind of almost dragged it away, but luckily the power line was the ground wire was holding onto it.
John keeps a diesel powered generator running so that the lights stay on throughout the village.
Everything's getting old, and yeah, right now it's kind of hard, and we're waiting on for new parts so we can get it running and make things easier.
If the current power plant went offline, there would be no electricity in Newtok. The school doesn't have power or running water, and it's the community's emergency evacuation center. Many people stayed there for days after Murbach. If another storm like it were to strike now, people here would have nowhere to go.
This village has been through so much that I think you get a resilience to everything.
Don Lloyd is Newtok's school principal. She's confident a new generator will be up and running at the school by the end of the summer. But she says what's happening in the community is scary, and she doesn't see an immediate solution.
The village has just been through so much that they just, okay, it's one more really bad thing. I think most generally have the sense that if it was a genuine emergency, they would go somewhere.
Tanunik is more than 40 miles south by boat and snow machine. Tuksuk Bay and Nightmute are also options, but those trips would take even longer. In an email, Jeremy Zedek, a spokesman with the State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, said it's the community's responsibility to organize and manage their emergency shelter. Zedek said if the community doesn't have a functioning emergency shelter, the state would check in with the local government to see what needs to happen, and it could help in an evacuation. Don Lloyd says she's not sure people outside Newtok really understand what residents here are dealing with every day.
But I think if they did realize how scary it was, Makhtarvik would have gotten finished sooner, would be what I'd like to think.
In Newtok, I'm Emily Schwing.
While reports of gray whale strandings along the Pacific coast have jumped since 2019, there's at least one place where these whales seem to be thriving. As KCAW's Meredith Reddick reports, hundreds of gray whales migrating from Mexico to their Arctic feeding grounds are stopping in Sitka along their route.
Sitka has always been home to charismatic megafauna like humpback whales and stellar sea lions, but over the past few years, a new marine all-star has emerged.
We were pulling into an anchorage off of Shoals Point. We're just going to sit down there to go to shore and go walk the beach. And these two gray whales came right up to us.
That's Blaine Anderson, captain of the sailboat Bob, describing an encounter with a gray whale just west of Sitka. Gray whales have often visited Sitka, but over the past few years, boaters and biologists have seen an unusual increase in gray whale activity.
We were just talking to somebody up in the parking lot who said at one point last year he estimated over 700 whales, gray whales.
700 might be on the high end, but whale biologist Lauren Wild says the number of gray whales in Sitka Sound used to hover around 10 or 20. Since 2019, it's been closer to 150. As Wild says,
it's whale soup out here.
Most of the news about gray whales in recent years has been pretty dismal. In May 2019, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration declared an unusual mortality event due to elevated strandings of West Coast gray whales. Before that, a 2015 and 2016 marine heat wave, sometimes referred to as the blob, devastated Pacific Coast fauna from whales to seabirds. In Sitka, though,
if people have been seeing them, they're seeing whales rolling around and playing with each other. They're seeing a lot of feeding behavior, a lot of social behavior. Some people are seeing what looks like mating behavior.
Like humpbacks, which are commonly seen in Sitka Sound, gray whales use baleen to feed. Unlike humpbacks, gray whales feed in the shallows, filtering silt and sand to get to tiny critters like shrimp. Gray whales are smaller and often covered in parasitic barnacles and long scars from rolling around on the rocks. Wild usually studies humpbacks and sperm whales, but the gray whale influx has piqued her interest. While it's not entirely clear what is bringing this barnacle-covered baleen bonanza to the waters of Sitka Sound, Wild has a few ideas.
So we sort of wondered if the marine heat wave maybe disrupted some of the reliability of food in the Bering Sea and Chukchi Seas in the summer, and if that possibly sort of prompted these whales to be looking for more opportunistic places to forage along their migration routes so they weren't relying so much on those food sources.
The food source, likely herring eggs on the outer edge of Kruzoff Island.
If you look at a map, the tip of Cape Edgecombe is right along the outer coast, and if whales are migrating by and they just happen to be there at the right time, they might sort of start seeing more of that herring spawn, and it might pique their attention.
Pacific herrings spawn each spring in the waters around Sitka, and these fish and their eggs are an important food source for marine organisms and humans alike. Herring roe in Sitka is already a hotly contested resource, and now these motivated mysticetes may have joined the competition. Wild says that the timing and location of gray whale sightings correspond to areas of herring spawn. She also points to observations from Alaska Department of Fish and Game spawn surveys.
They'll be diving and see gray whales around their dive boat and stuff. So they're certainly in the same area that those eggs are. And then they've seen sort of, you know, kelp that looks, you know, sea kelp beds that look sort of shredded, like that they're imagining is probably gray whales coming through and sucking up eggs off the kelp and rolling around in it.
Wild hopes to confirm exactly what these whales are eating, even if the fieldwork gets messy.
And obviously you don't know when they're going to defecate, so you kind of have to be at the right place at the right time, and we'll use like a little skim, like almost like a fish pond net, that's fine mesh, to sort of scoop it up. You can also scoop it up with water and like an algae or something.
Understanding what these whales eat is one part of the puzzle. Wild is also hoping to start building a catalog to identify and track individual whales to figure out which whales are coming to Sitka and where else they're going along their migration route. In the meantime, both Wild and Anderson urge boaters to be cautious around gray whales, which may be more likely to approach humans than the average Sitka humpback. In Mexico, boaters can legally approach and interact with gray whales.
They get chin scratches, and they, you know, I've seen pictures of people kissing them, and it's something that perhaps they've gotten used to.
The whales may ignore political borders, but Alaska boaters are still required to follow the Marine Mammal Protection Act. To avoid harassing whales, NOAA encourages boaters to stay 100 yards away and put engines into neutral if a whale approaches. We don't know what will happen in the future with these new visitors or what the implications are for the West Coast gray whale population as a whole, but for now, it seems that this struggling population has found a haven in Sitka, feeding, socializing, and even, as Anderson has observed a few times, mating.
It was all supposed to happen down in Mexico, but it does seem like they're continuing their frisky ways up in, as we call it, romantic Sitka Sound.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
Stocks open higher this morning. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer with the Marketplace Minute. Investors are betting that Washington negotiators are close to a deal on the debt ceiling. A new Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll says about two-thirds of U.S. adults are very concerned about how a government default would affect the economy. New York Fed President John Williams said today, economic models show we could return to the low interest rate environment we had before the pandemic once the Fed gets inflation under control. Williams was talking about the natural rate of interest, one that doesn't stimulate or slow the economy. There's a new version of ChatGPT for the iPhone. It's from OpenAI. You'll be able to speak to ChatGPT on the app. It'll respond in writing. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate investment and technology. See a brighter way.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Well, good afternoon. It's Friday, May 19th. The year, in case you forgot, is 2023. Sunrise today was at 5:38 a.m. Sunset tonight is 10:34 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow is 5:36 a.m. Right now, today we have 16 hours and 56 minutes of daylight. That's a gain of 3 minutes and 52 seconds since yesterday. Looking at our marine weather for the next few days, from Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, there's a gale warning tonight and Saturday. Today, east winds of 25 knots, seas to 7 feet. Tonight, east winds of 30 knots, increasing to 40 knots after midnight with seas to 12 feet. And Saturday, east winds of 35 knots with seas to 15 feet and rain. Looking at the Shelikof, there's also a gale warning tonight and Saturday. Today, northeast winds of 30 knots, seas to 8 feet. Tonight, east winds of 35 knots with seas to 8 feet. And tomorrow, east winds of 40 knots with seas to 9 feet. We have time for a few community announcements. Tomorrow, join Special Olympics Saturday, that's tomorrow, for the 2023 Alaska Law Enforcement Torch Run and Pledge Drive. This family fun run takes place in 14 communities across our great state, including here in Kodiak. The Torch Run starts at 10 a.m. Saturday, May 20th in the Kodiak High School parking lot. You can pre-register online or register on Saturday at check-in at 9:30 a.m. at the high school parking lot. Run, walk, or stroll the 5K from the high school parking lot down to Trident Basin, which is on Near Island and back. It's free to participate and open to everyone who wants to support the Special Olympics. You can join with your friends and family. All proceeds support sports training and competition for people with intellectual disabilities in your community. Keep the flame of hope burning for more than 2,000 Special Olympics Alaska athletes statewide. You can register or donate at SpecialOlympicsAlaska.org or call Eddie Ecker at 907-222-7625 for more information. And the Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary will be meeting on Saturday, May 20th, that's tomorrow, in PKIMC's Pyramid Room beginning at 10 a.m. Agenda items will include celebrating scholarship recipients. This will be the last general meeting until fall. Refreshments will be provided and the public is welcome to attend. And also tomorrow, May 20th, that's Saturday at 1 p.m. in the library, the library is having a garden party. Come get your hands dirty and help beautify the library garden for summer. Tools are provided. Please wear something comfortable that you can get dirty. That's tomorrow at 1 p.m. One more, the Kodiak Public Library Association Crab Festival annual used book sale is the library's biggest fundraiser, and they need your help to make it happen. All proceeds from the sale go to support public library materials and programs. They need help loading and transporting books from storage to the library, and they need volunteers to greet people, collect money, and help keep the sales table stocked during the sale. They're using signup.com to organize upcoming signups. Days, times, and duties are on the signup page. A link to the online sign-up is posted on the Kodiak Public Library's website. That's kpla.us. You can also email them at hello@kpla.us or call Mike at 907-486-6498 if you prefer not to sign up online.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.